welcome to episode 62 of The Lab. I'm your host, Brad Barton. Let's talk about a little bit of chemistry. I was talking about ionization in the previous episode, episode 61. Sometimes a particular chemical element is holding on to some of its electrons rather loosely. And it will, under the right circumstances, say when it absorbs a photon, give up an electron or more and become positively charged. Electrons have a negative charge, so when an electrically neutral atom loses an electron, it ends up with a positive charge. The ionization energy is a measure of how much energy it takes to knock an electron loose. There are other chemical elements that really rather desperately want an extra electron or two, so that if one happens to be nearby, it may latch on to that atom, giving it a negative charge. The property whereby an atom wants to accept extra electrons is called electron affinity. When an atom accepts an electron, it releases energy. Generally speaking, when a photon encounters charged particles, those particles move. Whereas, when charged particles move, they can release photons. It depends upon whether there's a net increase or decrease in potential energy. It's often described as molecules or atoms bumping against each other. It's more accurate to say that they move towards or away from each other and release or absorb photons. They never actually touch. It's the exchange of photons that causes material to bounce off one another. If you have various ices being bathed by ionizing radiation, electrons can be knocked loose from where they're living and find new homes. There have been some experiments done taking various frozen materials that are extremely common in the icy planets and in comets, such as methane, water, carbon dioxide, and ammonium. Methane is a carbon atom bonded to four hydrogen atoms. Carbon has four spots it can bond with, and it can bond with a lot of different elements. Sometimes, if it absorbs a photon and one of those bonds is interrupted, one carbon can end up bonding to another one, so that for each carbon atom, one of the four hydrogens it was holding onto is replaced by a bond with the carbon atom. So instead of methane, one carbon and four hydrogens, you get something like ethane, two carbons bonded together, surrounded by six hydrogens. As the chain grows longer, you get other names like propane or butane, or higher up you get things like octane and decane. Sometimes a hydrogen is lost from a water molecule, leaving what's called hydroxyl, which is an oxygen and a hydrogen bonded together. That can attach itself to a hydrocarbon chain, methane, ethane, propane, butane, and so forth, and form an alcohol, such as, with just one carbon, three hydrogens, and one hydroxyl, methanol, or wood alcohol, which is extremely poisonous, don't drink it, or with two carbons, ethane, one of the hydrogens being replaced by hydroxyl, gives you ethanol, which is mildly toxic, as in intoxicating. And yes, you can drink it, and lots of people do. Complex hydrocarbons like this can end up bonded to things like sulfur, phosphorus, iron, and just many other things. When they bathe cometary-like ice with ultraviolet, the chemical reactions can produce biologically relevant molecules, such as simple sugars or even amino acids. Amino acids in particular are necessary for building proteins and enzymes, whereas simple sugars are necessary for building things like RNA and DNA. It's one thing to have done this in the laboratory, but they have also been detected in space. The Rosetta mission, which actually landed a probe on a comet, discovered amino acids in the comet, and there have been simple sugars discovered in various molecular clouds, including clouds around fairly young sun-like stars. The next question is, well, if they're being produced in space, can they make it to a planet, or are they destroyed as they burn their way through the atmosphere? Well, meteorites, as in rocks that have made it to the surface of the Earth, have been found that have amino acids within them, including one meteorite where it's clear that it was a couple of asteroids that had hit each other and got much hotter than you would expect amino acids to survive. Not quite sure how they got there. It's thought that perhaps there's a process that makes amino acids that we don't understand, that maybe took place as the material cooled. As usual, I have links to articles on the show page, which you can find by visiting thelabwithbrad.com, including some of the laboratory experiments and various places where they have detected biologically relevant molecules in comets and meteorites and in space. What this means is that even before our sun was a sun, even before our planet was a planet, the radiation from the protostar, bathing the ice in the protoplanetary disk, was already starting to produce the precursors of life. This is why we had to stop and talk about chemistry and protostars and the protoplanetary disk when we're talking about the way our universe produced our minds. It started before the Earth. It turns out that processes that make the chemicals that build up life can take place from the deep sea to deep space, and that they are ubiquitous, suggesting that our planet isn't the only one that had the opportunity to create life.